Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Here's a really special treat. Australian piano virtuoso Roger Woodward. The Prelude No. 1 in C minor by Mr. Bach. And no one plays it with the touch of Roger Woodward. What an extraordinarily gifted player. An Australian gift to the world, in fact. He is an official living treasure in Australia. He grew up in Sydney, but now he's a citizen of the world, although he comes back to Australia whenever he possibly can. Famous for the French masters such as Chopin and Debussy, he has, nevertheless, an extraordinarily wide repertoire. He's currently working with the Australian National Film and Sound Archive, putting down a collection of recordings for posterity. Now, I caught up with him in Canberra between takes, and also during a tour of Australia in which he's been going to many regional centres. We caught up with him ahead of a concert at Parramatta's Riverside Theatre. We spoke about music, life and faith.
It's a very long and wonderful Aussie tradition. Goes back to the Federation years and the late 19th century. A lot of those Federation buildings, they're acoustic gems, and they were built for public speaking, so making music there is... It's a joy to continue this tradition. There's a tiny place I always go to, and I went there recently to raise funds. It's an opera house, the Prince of Wales Opera House in Gulgong. And it's between a pub and a coffee shop.
Yes, yes.
And it looks nothing from the street. And you go in and there's this magnificent Federation Hall. And Henry Lawson recited there. There's a Henry Lawson Museum there.
Yes.
Ellen Terry, my great aunt, used to act there. And Nellie Melba, before she was married, she used to sing there. Percy Grainger played there. There's a lot of people from the past played there. The townsfolk in Gulgong kept that theatre in very good nick. They bought from the ABC many years ago a 9-foot Steinway grand piano, and they kept that in very good nick. So I go there, I play in this acoustic gem steeped in history with a very, very good concert grand in it, and it's just a pleasure, and it's seeing friends there. I must have played there over 40 years, about 20 concerts, and it's just a joy. Then I went to Springwood, and there's a new hall, magnificent new hall in the mountains.
Oh,
yeah. And then I went up to Darwin. I went for the first time, saw the Kakadu National Park. I'm just kind of soaking myself in Australia at the moment, and feeling being in Australia, and it's just the most wonderful thing. We have such a wonderful country, and you have to be away from it a little bit to really appreciate just how wonderful it is.
You have a great sense of place about your music as well. I've read that if you're going to record something, you'll often play it in concert first because you want to get that sense of renewed inspiration about doing something live in front of an audience. So if you're interpreting a Debussy or a Chopin or, for that matter, Bach or whoever, does some of the place in which you're playing, the audience to which you're playing it, does that then inhabit the music that you play?
Yeah, it always affects you. Every single time you play, it's to different people, and the impact of other people's emotions on what you play, it really tells and helps shape your playing and the way you play. And it's the sharing of music that's the most beautiful thing.
Mm.
We could talk about it for more complex reasons, the physics and the chemistry of this reaction between performer and audience, but it's the spark that comes from this that's something we don't really understand. And it's something very powerful, this sharing of something so beautiful. I don't know, I've tried to rationalize this all my life, and I still haven't got to the bottom of it. But what I do know is that sharing wonderful experiences playing music or sharing music, it's just something from God, really.
Well, yes, isn't it? It's a gift because it's in the spiritual realm that this transaction is occurring. between you and the audience, you and the composer, you and your instrument?
Well, it's, I don't know, it's sacred, it's special. I don't know what label to attach to this, but there's some mysterious forces outside ourselves that I think we tend to play down in our attempt to rationalize everything around us. And it's some things I have to confess I just don't understand, and the effect of music is one of them. But it's all I know is that there are some things, some mysterious forces outside ourselves that guide and shape our lives, and it's just wonderful having music as part of it. And it's sharing, the sharing of music,
yes,
is a part of this, and it's just such a privilege to continue to be invited to play and to help people with projects along the way. Yes. And to give classes with kids and I live a good life and I'm very grateful for it. I'm grateful to Australia for all it's given me all my life.
Well, you're very generous with what you give back. What is your sense of God then?
I don't know. My feeling is that the faith is a very powerful thing, and the concept of a deity. An all-loving deity, and the laws that go with that, and the belief system that goes with that, whatever it is, it helps guide and shape my life and my family's, and I think to be able to feel that you live in a way that creates a sense of harmony and peace and love and joy with others. It's a wonderful thing.
Our guest on Open House is the great Roger Woodward. The word genius is so often overused, but you can certainly apply that in Roger Woodward's case. Maestro for sure. Decades at the forefront of world music. You started in Chatswood. That's where you were born. Chatswood in Sydney, a pretty middle-class-ish sort of suburb at the time. And a lot of your background was in that very thing of sacred music. You were playing in churches, playing organs and so on. What was that like? What do you remember of that?
Well, I went with my brother and my two sisters to the Chatswood Church of Christ. I had access to a pipe organ there. It was a small instrument. And I learned the works of Bach on it. And the church became a part of our lives, and it became a driving force in our family. We were not fanatics or anything. I found music in the church a very helpful thing as I was taking piano lessons. And in fact, I was going to be a church musician, but I won a competition. And then after that, I started playing concerts and I won other prizes and awards and just kept on playing the piano.
That's a way of putting it, but it runs to pages and pages in your biography. I just want to go back to that Bach, though. The Bach is the most extraordinarily in touch musician. His works operate at an intellectual plane, but of course they operate at a spiritual plane as well. What do you think is going on there when you play Bach? How does that feel?
Well, from the age of 7, when I heard the St. Matthew Passion,
yes,
at the St. Andrew's Cathedral, that opening chorus with the two choirs and the two chamber orchestras and the soloists, the organ, and it was, I felt the ground move under my feet,
yes,
and it's, nothing was ever the same since then. It was It was like looking up into the great starry firmament and wondering at this gigantic expanse, what it was all about, and the sheer ecstasy of living.
Yes.
But it was this phenomenal power of this music and its joy, its huge, joyous spirit. And I think everybody who followed Bach, Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Chopin, everybody, Brahms, Debussy, they all had this experience with Bach, and he's more or less the father of the whole of Western classical music, or Western art music, for want of a better term.
Can you fathom what it would be like to have that level of creativity? Most of us look to you and say, wow, if only we could understand what it was to have the gift of Roger Woodward. But I wonder how Roger Woodward thinks when you look back to Bach and try to fathom how his creative genius expressed itself.
Well, Bach was a very hard-working musician. He composed, directed music for four churches in Leipzig, had all these children to bring up, and he had to teach in the school Latin to these kids and St. Thomas's as well. But it was a very practical business. And playing instruments and getting on with a musical life, there's so much to do. There's so much preparation to do. Yes. And you get lost in just doing it. And it comes back basically to this idea when Tchaikovsky was once asked, you know, how much of it is inspiration and how much is perspiration? And he said that 95% of it was perspiration, and that he composed music Mondays to Fridays, certain 9 to 5 kind of thing. This idea of music being something which is a very practical thing you have to prepare and to make sure you perform to the best you can. Mm-hmm. It involves very, very practical things. And so it might come across to the audience as a wonderful thing. Well, when you see a great sportsman, a tennis player, ace someone on a court, and you just see that body movement and the self-confidence and everything that goes into that one action of the service, you just wonder, oh my God, you know, how can someone do something like that? And of course, the answer is pretty simple. It's a lot of practice, a lot of lonely hours, a lot of preparation at a very practical level. And it's like any other job. You have to do it well if you want it to sound good, you know, or look good.
The great Roger Woodward is our guest on Open House. How do you prepare then? Do you still practice every day?
You bet. You know, I have to. It's I've learned to use time better though when I do practice, and when I sit at my instrument. I know what I want to do, and I do it slowly and in a way that sounds a bit odd, and don't just open the piano and kind of go bang, bang, bang. But I know the passages I have to work slowly and deliberately, quietly, and work out which fingers I'm going to use, and getting the posture right, and getting the sound right, and scaling the sound overall. And it's just a very practical process.
Is that what you teach your students now?
Yeah, really, how to master their instruments, how to have self-confidence in playing. That's really, I think, more than half of it. Just having self-confidence and faith in yourself, in what you're doing, and to love what it is you're doing, and it's something which is a very joyous thing to have somebody who wants to actually study with you. And I give master classes in different cities in the world, and I play concerts in many places. I meet students after concerts, and I'm on in juries of international piano competitions very often. And it's the world is busier than ever in my profession, and there are more people studying piano and playing music than ever before. And it's wonderful, because music is such a positive force, and I think it provides such a lot of joy for people.
It does. Do you think you're playing as well now, or better than you have in the past?
It's awful to say this, but I know I play better, because things that I used to find difficult or more challenging when I was younger, I take in my stride now. I know what I want, and I don't take so long in trying to achieve it. And this is important to me. And it's, as you get older, you need to be very sure-footed in what it is you want from music, and yes, refining the process, it just keeps going on.
That's interesting, yeah, though, is it? I feel the sense of walking sure-footedly now. You're talking about playing sure-footedly. So are there places you won't put your feet anymore? Are there places you won't go with music, or are you still challenging yourself to press ahead?
I'm still challenging myself, and I'm still learning new works. I'm learning some works by North American composers and French composers at the moment, and yeah, by some Aussie composers. And I'm playing the great traditions at the same time. But I think it's important to achieve some kind of overall balance with the repertoire, and to not specialize too much. Mm. And to not spend too many hours practicing at the piano. It's really, or practicing your instrument, it's very important to spend time just reading the music and hearing it inside yourself, away from the instrument.
Oh, that's interesting.
And doing a lot of preparation away from the instrument.
Yes. Well, Chopin was, the Chopin Academy is where you spent a lot of those very formative years. And it's interesting to say that you don't want to be buried in one tradition of music only. And there's absolutely no doubt, from Bach through to Xenakis, or, you play everything, and it's an extraordinary compass of what you do.
But I think most Aussies differ from Europeans and Americans in
That's
this sense. And the European experience, I mean, there's a colleagues in Europe very often feel weighted down, I should put it that way. Not weighed, but weighted down by the burden of tradition.
Interesting.
And for example, Alfred Brendel used to complain in Vienna that he was only accepted if he played Mozart or Beethoven in a certain way. And then when he moved to London, he felt much freer in the way he could go about playing, and that he was accepted for that.
Well, what makes Australians different?
Aussies, I remember in school when we were taught that it was noble to do something new, and you were encouraged to do something of your own, and that it was noble to do that, but at the same time to respect European traditions. So we grew up more or less with the belief that it was important to respect the traditions and new things, doing new things. So our repertoire was always large. I mean, Joan Sutherland, she sang everything. And when she was alive, and our musicians, most Aussie musicians have huge repertoires. And I'm no exception.
Well, no, but do you have a special relationship with Chopin and Debussy, this program that you'll be bringing to Parramatta most soon?
Well, I love Chopin, and I'm playing the second book of Etudes, which is a kind of trapeze act, I suppose, in a way. I like to pace myself with that.
Yeah.
And they're very beautiful. They're called Etudes, but they're very beautiful poems as well, as being technically challenging. It's and I'm also playing one of the great middle period works, the Fourth Ballade, a very beautiful work of his. And then two works of Debussy, one very well known, the Estompe, which is three images. One of them is Burmese temple, and then there's another one taken in Spain, Soirée d'Enquenade, and then the last piece is Le Jardin sous la pluie, the gardens in the rain. And they're very descriptive, highly descriptive pieces with vivid imagery. And then the Joyous Island, L'Île Joyeuse, which is probably the best piano piece of the 20th century in many ways. It's so these two works of Debussy, they're quite short. In fact, the whole program's quite short. But it's I'm going to be playing some extra pieces by Chopin that I've been asked to.
An encore or two, perhaps. What makes you say that that's one of the best pieces of the 20th century? How do you assess that?
It's very concisely written. It's very joyous. It's got an incredible surging spirit about it. It's a kind of the bacchanalia feel about it. It's one of the most beautifully written, highly polished pieces of Debussy, with these shimmering impressionist surfaces.
Wow.
And the geometry of the piece is just impeccable.
Wow.
It's so finely written. It's only about 5 minutes long, but it's certainly one of the best things Debussy ever wrote. And it was after his visit to the National Gallery in London and in the Louvre. He based, I think, this work on a painting by Watteau, the Embarkment for Citerre. And it really looks, you can see the people who are getting on the raft, leaving the Age of Reason, going to this Arcadian island of delights, greeting the whole of the Enlightenment. And there's this big question mark this painting posed in 1717 when Watteau painted it.
Yes.
That has this huge spirit about it, and it's more or less like that last movement of the Beethoven Seventh Symphony, which is riotously A major thing.
Yeah,
and
yes.
Debussy has this, it's like a romp. It's a huge huge a sense of abandon about it. It's quite a wild piece.
But here we are, back at the intersection of the profane and the sacred, in a way. This is a program about life, faith, and hope. Do you pray? Where do you look for hope?
I pray, I pray every day for people I love, and for people I don't necessarily like all that much. There are some political leaders in the world who are extremely evil. They're the Antichrist, and I pray for their souls, for the damage they're doing to families, to values, to fundamental freedoms, and to the huge damage they're doing to the human spirit. But we also have wonderful leaders, families who became enshrined in constitutional monarchies, who provided wonderful leadership at a very simple level.
Hmm.
We have also leaders who protect the environment, who genuinely care about people who are not so privileged, and who really do try and help them. It's not all about them. It's all their careers, political careers, but they really reach out. I pray for myself to get guidance and for forgiveness of my own sins and to forgive other people's sins. I think it sounds kind of almost childish to just say these things, but
not at all. As
I get older, I think the moral values of our life and the worth of our lives, it's very, very important.
Yes.
And that we are able to do some good with our lives to people who may not be so privileged.
People who listen to this program are prayers. How can we pray for you?
I don't know. I pray for this concert that it might be a success, that
okay.
I might play beautifully for you.
It's been so wonderful getting to know you. Thank you so much for the way you apply your gift and for your generous spirit. Thank you very much for speaking with us, Roger Woodward.
Thank you for having me. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Roger Woodward. And you've just heard part of Debussy's Sweet Bergamasque. It's the movement entitled Clair de Lune. It's in D-flat, all of the black keys, and marked pianissimo most of the way through, so that's very, very soft. But if you get the chance, listen again to how Roger Woodward picks individual lines, like something that's illuminated by the shining light of the moon. What a skill. What a gift.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.